The following is a conversation with Levi Barker, a master facilitator of the African psychedelic known as Iboga. Levi was inducted and trained by the Bawiti tribe in Gabon, Africa, and has been serving Iboga at the Iboga Wellness Center in Costa Rica for over 6 years. This is one of the most fascinating and intense medicines out there, known for being one of the most effective remedies to breaking the cycles of amongst the toughest addictions in the world. Levi discloses everything from the nature of Iboga, what it's traditionally been used for, and how it's profoundly altered and shaped the life he leads today, helping others to find a true sense of healing and self-acceptance from within. Levi humbly and generously shares his extensive knowledge of this path and what it means to him to be working with this medicine. I truly hope you find this conversation as interesting and as valuable as I did, and if you'd like to support our show, please give us a 5-star rating and go to patreon.com/Elysium Project. And without further ado, Levi Barker. All right, and we're live. Mr. Levi Barker, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. Excited to be able to spread the word of Iboga to your audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's just, Iboga is a medicine I'm not overly familiar with, but after reading several reviews just off of your guys' wellness center website, the Iboga Wellness Center, and then even seeing comments on different video clips on YouTube of people speaking about Iboga, a common thread is that this medicine literally gave them their life back after going through some of the most tumultuous and unthinkable living situations and addictions. This plant helped them break free of these things and actually gifted them their life back. And so I guess a good place to start would be if you could share with our listeners, what is Iboga? And we'll just start there as a context.
Sure. So the way I think of Iboga is as a gift of nature to really connect humans back to who they really are and teach them about life. And so really when you get into Iboga, like a typical journey a person would have, it really grounds them to the truths about being a human, you know, and being a human involves a lot of different things, and relationships, the relationship with ourselves, our mind, how we learn our past. And so, Iboga just has these properties of, just really teaching us what's important in life and what to focus on. And so, but it's a plant or a shrub from West Central Africa, kind of Gabon, Cameroon, the Congo. So it's a rainforest plant as well. And and so at some point, the pygmy people who possibly could be the earliest inhabitants of Earth found this plant and started using it. And as they used it, they found time and time again that messages kept coming through about living here on Earth, you know, connecting with nature, connecting with ourselves. And the kind of one of the foundational things that Iboga gives people, like you said, it really does save lives and turn around lives for people in many different ways for many different human things that we have to go through. And but it really gives you a deep appreciation of life and really shows you how big of an opportunity this is, because, you know, without our life, we're not quite sure what's happening. Like, we can't experience it yet. And so it really gives people just the appreciation back for life. And that's kind of the starting point on the healing journey. You know, at times in life we may, or if you've never, be thankful, but, you know, we get into a point in life, like, what's this about? Like, you know, and if you have a really hard time, like, should I even continue living? And so Iboga gives people the appreciation of life again, just really valuing their life. And then it teaches people to be responsible for their lives. And it really works for all these things that we have to deal with as humans, you know, whether, you know, some people have great parents, some people not so great parents, you know, and that can really affect people growing up. And then, experiences that happen to us through life, it can help us kind of turn the corner on those things and just really get a fresh start. And so, yeah, it's the bark of a root of this shrub called iboga. And so the roots are taken and the second layer of bark is scraped off, and you can eat it then fresh, or a lot of times they'll dry it up into a powder. You know, you serve it off the spoon or throw it back in your hand. And it is a psychedelic, but it's very, very unique. Like, it can be very, very psychedelic for some people, and for other people, it's more just like work of working things out in the mind through the body. And so, you know, at its core, it's definitely a healing plant, and it's not something most people do a lot in their lives. Like me, I've been working with iboga for the last 14, going on 15 years. And throughout those 15 years, I've kind of had 8-9 times where I've taken like a larger amount of it. And I do take, you know, smaller doses of it quite often. But yeah, it's not something that people can continually have to take these big doses of it. Like, eventually it gives you the guidance on like what needs to happen. And then there's a time that we need to practice those things and really learn them and implement them in our lives. And so, yeah, iboga is unique in that way from other plant medicines. So a lot of plant medicines, we take it, kind of feel great afterwards, have some clarity, and then, you know, move on with our lives. But the time where that guidance is with a lot of medicines is quite a bit shorter than iboga. So iboga is like, take it, not really feel good or comfortable for quite a while. And then eventually, you know, once you recover, there's this motivation there to just do what's right for yourself. And that continues on for, you know, months afterwards. So it's unique in that way that it really does continue to guide. And, you know, what happens physiologically is we take iboga, and which has 13 alkaloids. Some of your listeners may be familiar with ibogaine, which is one of those. And they process through the liver and then kind of slowly drip out over a extended period of time. And so it's really valuable time afterwards where people can really implement new habits and just ways of being.
How did you come onto this path, Levi? Like, how did you, because you've been now a lead facilitator of the iboga medicine for years now. How did iboga come into your life from the very beginning, and now you're in a role where you're actually facilitating this medicine for other people?
Yeah, I have a good friend that introduced me to iboga. And so I was, 11, 12 year young opiate addict in California, and, did all the things that were available to try and stop opiates, but could never get there for an extended period of time. And eventually I asked a good friend of mine, a dear friend, and, you know, I think about it often, like, I'm so glad, you know, I asked him and, you know, came across this plant. Especially back then, it was quite a bit more, even more underground. And he told me about iboga, and, you know, I researched it a little bit, but he essentially told me, you know, with the opiate withdrawal, it takes away, you know, 80, 90, 100% of the physical symptoms of withdrawal. Like, you won't feel good, but you're not there, you know, shaking in bed and vomiting and everything else that goes along with that. And so I kind of did what you shouldn't do, but I was living in Nicaragua at the time. I ended up bringing some iboga with me, and I did a home detox. And, you know, it's just detoxing with iboga or ibogaine is very different than using it for like psycho-spiritual experiences. So if anybody's thinking about detoxing on their own, just really don't recommend it. Like, a lot of things can come up. You need to be sure you're fit for it. You need people around that know it. And, but anyways, I did, and I got through it. And that was kind of the start, you know, from, you know, 12 years of stuffing down your feelings and taking opiates so you don't have to think, you know, it was kind of the starting point for myself. So I went on living with not a lot of guidance, although I was clean. And then a year and a half later, the first Bwiti shaman to come to the West to work with iboga in a traditional way came to Costa Rica here. And so he was just right over the border of Nicaragua where I was at. And I ended up meeting him. And like I said, he was kind of the first guy that came that learned to speak English, that could really, you know, share about the medicine and worked with it all his life. You know, he's a 10th generation shaman. So it's been passed down through, you know, 800 years through his lineage or something like that. And so he came and started the first kind of psycho-spiritual Bwiti-based Iboga retreat. And so Bwiti is a path of Iboga. At least our Bwiti is a pure spiritual path. It's not a religion or anything like that, but just a way to approach life. And so had some ceremonies with him. Saw, you know, eventually that led into training to be an Iboga provider with him and just seeing a lot of people come through for a lot of different conditions or ailments or problems that people have. So for the audience, like, you know, you may have heard of Iboga or Ibogaine for addiction, but it's definitely just as good for depression, anxiety, PTSD, you know, which are all just labels that the West gives us for, you know, problems of the mind of some sort, you know, depending on where we go with it. OCD, you know, people come, sexual abuse, all other drugs, stop smoking. So, you know, and within that, there's a lot of different experiences people have, but Iboga is just as good for those things. So I saw, you know, hundreds of people come through and leave just in a better spot. Now, I'm hesitant to say healed, but what Iboga does is it gets people to the point in their life to then move forward from there. You know, they may be stuck or whatever. So it gives everybody the opportunity, like, here, you know, here's what you need to do. Here's what needs to shift. And some people are just going to go after that harder than others. But definitely saw 99.9% of people come out in a better place. And for many of them, like, a very significant turning point in their life. And so that went on for 5-6 years where this Bwiti shaman had this retreat. And eventually a good friend and also a mentor of mine named Gary Cook started Iboga Wellness about 8 and a half years ago. And he was the first graduate of this Bwiti shaman named Maginda. And he was the first one to start an Iboga retreat outside of or a Bwiti-based Iboga retreat outside of Maginda. And so I started working with him. Eventually went to get initiated in Africa, which is like a big ceremony to be, you know, a part of the Bwiti. And after I did that at the end of the trip, eventually that after about, you know, a good 7 years of working with Iboga and studying myself, eventually got the blessing to be able to serve the medicine from Maginda, the Bwiti shaman. And so that was the starting point of then actually giving somebody else Iboga. Up to that point, I'd never actually given anybody Iboga and, you know, kind of led them through the process. Although I had, you know, a lot of experience being around it, but that was, you know, kind of the starting point there. And so here at Iboga Wellness, like I said, we've been around about 8 years. And we've had at this point over 1,400 people come through. And so back in the day, Iboga wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. Word is kind of getting out now. And so more people are coming to it. And so, yeah, over the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's really gained a name for just being effective.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the major things I've heard about Iboga is that it can actually help essentially cure the biggest problem and epidemic of opiate addiction, like heroin and Oxycontin, like some of these extremely physically addictive drugs that have really harsh withdrawal symptoms. But then also that it can, you know, it's beyond just the opiates. It also can help one deal with severe depression and anxiety. A thought that just came to me as you were describing this, because we have a lot, like, these types of problems are very, like, modern day issues. I imagine Iboga has been around for a long, long time. I'm curious, do you know what the usages of it were way back when? You know, I'm not sure. I guess, do you know how long has Iboga been used for, to your knowledge, first of all?
Yeah, nobody's quite sure, like, how long, but it's definitely ancient. Like I said, you know, the pygmies were the first ones to work with it. And, you know, they've, you know, in a lot of ways kind of been confirmed as some of the first humans, you know, inhabitants of the earth. And so, I'm not sure how long. What was the other part of the question? Sorry.
The other part of the question is like, what was the usages of this medicine way back when? Like, cause heroin addiction and depression and sexual assault, like these are very much so modern day things. And I'm sure that they're issues that have extended for a long period of time, but what do you think the use of this medicine was, you know, before modern day times? Because I mean, it's only iboga is now only becoming a little bit more mainstream and well known. And so I does that question make sense? Like, you know,
that's a great question. That's the first time I've ever been asked that one too. So it is a really cool question. You know, if I had, you know, kind of guessing, kind of not, but definitely fertility was one of the first uses of iboga. And we see that even today with both men and women. I've definitely known women that had problems getting pregnant or had problems with their period before, and the iboga gets them back on cycle, and then, you know, they get pregnant. So that's happened. And, you know, that's one of the older uses for it. One of the oldest uses for plant medicines in general, and I know with the iboga would be right there as well, is like finding lost things or finding things. It goes with like ayahuasca and, you know, the other medicines as well. But I know, it's given me kind of a crazy ability to find things. Like sometimes,
wow.
Yeah, I can't find something, and I'll just kind of clear my mind. And like, just, you know, go into my senses for a second, then like start walking a certain direction and not thinking about it, but just kind of going there. And so that's one, you know, definitely how they would look at it. So you say the pygmies or, you know, older generations in Africa is, you know, mental problems would be some sort of, you know, spiritual malady that, something, whether it's a thought of another person or whatever, came into them and they need to get it out. So, you know, clearing out negative energy for sure. Finding out like what problems are happening within the group or the village, or why certain things are happening, or why somebody is responsible for things that are happening, would be some of the older uses for the medicine. And then, you know, kind of across the board, a big one is just the connection with nature and learning like the codes of nature. So finding other medicines within nature, you know, because there's other plants that work better than iboga for, you know, a lot of maybe physical, like acute things that may happen out in the jungle, like malaria or something like that. Even in Gabon now, they use it as a remedy for diabetes as well. And also high blood pressure, like iboga will lower your blood pressure down some. And, you know, one of the bigger ones is definitely for hunting as well. So, you know, iboga in smaller doses is stimulating, and it also heightens all of your senses. And just like, you can really kind of see the full picture. So, you know, if you imagine you're hunting in the jungle, it's tough to see things. So, you know, just kind of catching the smallest little movements that might be there. And that's also like within our Bwiti, a way that we approach life is as a hunter, not necessarily, you know, hunting animals per se, but hunting down whatever it is that we want in life, like constantly, you know, tracking things down, taking the steps necessary to go in and get those things. And so, a lot of it goes back to being a hunter. And and then, you know, they realized at some point that with any iboga and going through the right process, you can ask questions to yourself or about, you know, the world or nature or whatever may be happening. You can ask questions and get answers from the medicine. And so one thing they would do if they really wanted to know something was real or true and they had a question about something is they would take three people on three different nights and give them iboga and send them out to ask a question. And if all three of them came back with the same answer, they would accept that as, you know, the truth or the way, you know, the way that things should be handled. And, cool question.
Wow. Yeah, that's profound.
Yeah.
So before all of our, you know, modern day problems entered the picture, it was used to connect with the universe and connect with source and to actually essentially just become that much more intimate with nature, whether it be for hunting or finding medicine. I once heard the origins of the use of the Cambo medicine was used for the hunters to help them like get really dialed in and acutely attuned to the nature so they could hunt better.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I've heard that about Cambo as well. Yeah, I think, you know, somewhere along the line, like indigenous people, if they are hunters, you know, have some sort of tool to make them better hunters, because, you know, our life's depending on it in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. With regards to it actually dealing with our modern day problems, though, and actually helping people overcome these intense struggles of addiction, why do you think it is that it can actually have such a profound effect? Do you think it's because the iboga shows the individual what is in the unconscious mind and brings that forward so that they can like see this clearly now? And perhaps that's why they're left with a sense of clarity and direction. You know, like how does iboga help the individual overcome some of the hardest addictions of our world?
Mm-hmm. Well, iboga is going to first cleanse the body, you know. You know, depending on the drug, say like if it's opiate, like all the adrenals, your serotonin, your dopamine, like everything just gets fully out of whack. And so it's going to cleanse the opiates or the drugs, like whatever you kind of have in your body before iboga, if it's you know, not in you just naturally physiologically, like any other substances or things, like it's going to move them out. Similar to probably like Cambo in that respect too, like it's going to get whatever doesn't belong out. And so, but iboga does it in the way where, say with opiates, where people aren't there shaking, they're not going through the same physical symptoms, even though it is really hard. And then, yeah, depending on just the, you know, the person and the journey they need to have, it can definitely go in and maybe show them some things they didn't realize about the reason their life is this way now, you know, whether it was something that happened when they're young or some belief that they had about themselves. Like that's actually how mine started. So maybe a good example, but when I was growing up, my grandfather was a heroin addict from like a very young age, from the time he was like 14 years old, like in the 50s. Mm. And so, you know, I definitely saw that. And in the 80s, they started talking about addiction being a genetic thing. So I started seeing that on the news when I was like 9, 10 years old or so. And when I heard that, that kind of like, you know, made sense or helped me make sense of the world and why things are the way they are. Kind of like, oh, well, grandpa doesn't have a choice. And, you know, since he's my grandpa, I'm probably going to be an addict. And, you know, looking back, that stuck with me at some point. And so really, even from a new age, I had kind of already made the decision that at some point I'm going to try opiates and, you know, that's good. Something's going to happen there. And so I did it. So people can definitely see beliefs that they have about themselves that may have caused them to go and, you know, seek comfort within drugs. And so, yeah, and it just kind of lets you let things go, like things that, you know, you've been carrying around. And, you know, every addict, say, has guilt and shame that they carry around for, you know, why they are the way they are. And so iboga can kind of cross that line where they don't have to look back from that point. Like they can go forward and really forgive themselves and just, you know, just being like, that's, you know, how you let things go, you just let them go, right? You just like, I'm not going to continue to hurt myself with this, you know, this thought or this guilt that I bring on myself, because it's just going to continue to drag me down. So iboga really gives people the power to just let things in the past like go without having to affect their present moment anymore.
Why do you think it is that this isn't more readily available these days, other than the fact that it only up until this point in time, it's only now kind of being discovered and a little bit more commonly known? Why is it though that this isn't being more widely explored amongst like mainstream medicine and just mainstream, you know, just in our basic healthcare systems and whatnot? Mm-hmm. I understand iboga, like it is not for the faint of heart, like any psychedelic medicine, mm-hmm. obviously, but you know, with how big of a problem the opioid epidemic is, you would think that this would be getting more light of day amongst, you know, just among the common man. Do you think this, you know, why do you think that is?
Well, you know, iboga kind of got lumped in with all the psychedelics, I think, in the 60s as, you know, Schedule One substance. So that started. And then, you know, there was some early trials. There was a guy named Howard Lotsoff that eventually patented ibogaine for a bit. I think the patent's expired now, or, you know, other people are definitely able to use ibogaine now. But then, especially in the 80s, 90s, when it was more underground, people didn't know how to work with it as much. There was some deaths involved, and a lot of them were just in really, you know, uncontrolled circumstances, kind of going with it at somebody's house and, you know, not being able to monitor people properly. And so, you know, iboga can affect the heart. It can cause people's hearts to really slow down. And that's what's typically kind of happened in the past. And that's, you know, part of that is like people need to get themselves kind of to some sort of point, or at least be young. You know, if somebody's 50 with really diabetes and really bad blood pressure and liver problems, like you better have like doctors and people around that are going to watch this guy and be ready to, you know, intervene if need be. And so there was some deaths, you know. I think even so, over the last 20 years, I think, you know, there's maybe 40 of them documented or something like that. So not a lot, and especially in comparison to what, you know, the lives it has saved from people. But it's coming though. I think there's a company in Canada actually called Universal Ibogaine. And they're doing clinical trials in Canada right now, and I'm sure lobbying the government, trying to get some good data in to show that it's effective in a safe way. But another reason you mentioned too, it is a heavy experience. And so, yeah. You know, not everybody wants to go through that. So there's some companies looking to take the mind altering aspects of iboga or ibogaine away, which I don't think is going to be nearly as effective. I think that's a big part of how it works. And, you know, I don't think you're going to top nature in that way. No. So that's another reason, but I think it's going to be coming. Like it's just so much more effective than anything else that we have for physical addictions that, the data is kind of being generated now. You know, the problem with that, if everybody, like all of a sudden it opened up and you could go to a clinic in Canada or the States and use iboga or ibogaine, is there's really probably not enough iboga out there. You know, they make ibogaine.
I've heard this, yeah.
Yeah, primarily with iboga. There is a way to semi-synthesize ibogaine as well, but from what I've heard, it's not quite as effective, but thankfully that's there. So yeah, I think if everybody came to it, there wouldn't be enough iboga. It would drive the price up. It'd probably take it away from, you know, the indigenous people out there. But thankfully, like the people in Gabon and Cameroon, I imagine the Congo as well, like there's different people that are seeing the value in iboga and actually starting to farm it now. So if we could give it probably 10 years and then things really open up like on a wide scale, there might be enough for people.
Definitely. Yeah, I'd actually heard that recently, that because iboga, and maybe it was like 5-MeO as well, because it's becoming more and more popular, there was a thought that the iboga is going to become more and more scarce. And I mean, I can't even imagine if psychedelics got fully commercialized. I know that's kind of already in the process with mushrooms, for example. I heard something the other day that they're trying to take the psychedelic compounds of mushrooms, or rather the effects that they have or something like that, and put it into some kind of a pharmacological compound, which to me, in my mind, it just like, there's just something that doesn't seem right about that. You know, like it's just removing it from nature somehow synthetically.
Right.
And at times I suppose that that's, you know, valid or whatever, but yeah, there's just something strange about trying to commercialize something so sacred and so powerful and so profound.
Yep. Yeah, they're going to find that they can't do it better than nature.
Right.
You know, and there's going to be some people that will benefit like that, from that, like you're saying, you know, that they just wouldn't for whatever reason have any sort of psychedelic experience, but there's just not going to be the same results as, you know, just taking the plant in the proper environment. But yeah, it's going to be interesting what comes up with that kind of in the psychedelic medicine industry, where they're really experimenting with a lot of things. And it's going to be interesting to, you know, I think we will, in the States and Canada, turn the corner where these things will, you know, be regulated in some way and be able to, for people to get access to them, which is great. You know, if we can heal a lot of people here in Canada and the US and, you know, have a better society, I think a lot of good change can happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a wild concept, and it's really cool that it's becoming more and more talked about, like with them using mushrooms to treat PTSD, for example, or other psychedelic compounds like MDMA therapy. And what's so cool about these experiences, like, it's like you said, you've been working with Ibogaine for 15 years. You've maybe only done it 8 or 9, you know, serious journeys. I mean, that speaks volumes, and I can testify to that as well. It's like when I've done mushrooms in the past or had a profound experience with them, it's not like I'm looking to do mushrooms the next day again. Like it's those experiences are so, I don't know. They're just so profound, and it almost seems like it fundamentally changes my perception and how I view the world, and changes how I view myself, which is obviously what Iboga is doing in a very intensified period of time, in a very intense way. Because Iboga is uncommon to other psychedelics in the sense that it can last for quite a while. Correct?
Yeah. It's a long one.
It's a long one. Like how long does a typical Iboga journey last?
You know, so like say for the people that come here, like they're going to feel it to some degree for 24 hours, you know. Okay. Usually it's probably 16 or so of like heavy time with it. And then, but there's some people for whatever reason, maybe they're sensitive or they really want to go deep. Like, we've definitely had people, you know, 48, 72 hour journeys.
Wow.
And Iboga slows time down as well. And so you start getting to, you know, 36, 48 hours and still awake, and, you know, it's still affecting you. Like, it gets really, really hard. You're like ready for it to end and like, you know, come out the other end, but it's not really your choice at that point. And so people just kind of have to get through it. But you know, when people do have those really deep, long ones like that, it really changes their lives and brings a lot of good to them.
How has Iboga fundamentally affected your life, other than helping you triumph and overcome your previous addictions earlier in life? But how has it changed your perception of reality and the world itself, personally?
Yep. You know, at some point working through, you know, the process, just trying to live the best life, like Iboga works through the mind and really makes you aware of the thoughts you're thinking, where your energy is going within those thoughts. And it teaches you, you have to be positive with yourself, even in really difficult times. Because if we don't, then we can definitely, dig ourselves a bigger hole and keep, you know, keep going deeper and deeper into it. And really, really in my mind, like completely changed my mind. I used to, you know, be an atheist as well. Not anymore. Not that I know exactly what, you know, God is or anything, but there's something out there that, you know, sprung life forth. So that's definitely changed me. My relationship with nature has certainly changed, like through, you know, Iboga, getting really into plants and like Iboga plants and like studying them and how they grow and stuff like that. You know, and it's really simplified my life. I found that like, it's really, you know, life, you know, if you make too many aspects of life, it can start becoming overwhelming and just too much. So I try and keep things really simple in my life. And, you know, within that simplicity, find a lot of freedom. But really, you know, the thing that gives us feelings inside of our body is our own mind. And so the mind is such a, you know, it can create all these great things in our life. It can also be responsible for a lot of the suffering that happens in our life. And so we have to work out the mind. And so Iboga really goes in and just scrubs the mind, like physically and also mentally, you know, especially like say people with OCD thoughts or, you know, fears come from the mind as well. Beliefs come from the mind. You know, we tell people here, beliefs are beliefs because we can't fully verify them. You know, and the same with fears. We can't fully verify fears. Like they're solely based on a thought, you know, that someone or something is going to hurt us. And so the Iboga can really move through and get the fears out of us. And, you know, I think it's pretty accepted practice now, you know, that, you know, the thoughts or the energy that we produce inside, like affects the things around us. Or like, you know, like the Japanese guy that started studying water is like playing different sounds to water. And you know, they start making up different geometric designs. If it's like a nice, you know, soothing sound, and if it's like, you know, so, you know, like a truck driving by or whatever, you know, it's all rippled up. And so, you know, every thought we have gives us a feeling inside, and that feeling, you know, we give off an energy to that, in that feeling that comes, that goes through our body, but it also gets broadcast out into the universe. And based on that energy, everything reacts differently around us, our, you know, our friends, our family, nature. And so, yeah, if we can really, you know, it's not that, you know, even with Iboga, I don't think negatively, I do, but the difference is I don't take it fully inside and allow it to charge my body and, you know, do that. And so, yeah, just, and it can be difficult. It took me a while to learn to be positive and fully forgive myself and work through my beliefs and, you know, bad habits and things like that. But yeah, it's really, you know, one of the main things it does is just, it's a powerful mind tool and shows you how your own mind works. And it doesn't just leave you there, but it shows you how you can think a different way, you know. And like I said, the thoughts we have give us our emotions inside, and depending on our emotions and what we're feeling, that's going to drive the decisions that we make in life. And if we're not feeling good inside based on our thoughts, we're just probably not going to make the right decisions for ourselves. And of course, our decisions give us everything. And Iboga really also taught me that, like, you know, as simple as it sounds, like the only time ever happening is right now. Like our past is now just a memory. It's a thought now. Like it did happen, but it's not happening now. And the future is never actually happening. You know, we can go into the future, and of course we do want to plan things in life, but going into the future and, you know, thinking about all the horrible things that can happen isn't helping us. And so Iboga really shows you that, you know, if we want to have a good future, like, you know, all we can do is take care of the present moment, and that's where everything happens. Do we want to have a good life? Okay, then we need to take care of what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's such a gift. It what a sacred gift to be able to come into contact, or at least to come into some kind of awareness within oneself of being able to essentially observe the mind, watch the mind, and recognize that all is existing within the mind fundamentally. It's like the first hermetic principle that I learned about, called the law of mentalism. Okay. Which states that the universe is mental, like the all is the mind. All is the mind. Mm-hmm. They say that even the universe itself was a thought in the mind of the creator of the all. But it seems, cool. Yeah, it's so cool. It's so cool, brother. It's the Kabbalion. It's all about the hermetic principles.
Okay.
Definitely check that out if you ever get a chance. But it seems like with Iboga, though, like to be able to get to the point in one's awareness, to even be able to get there, to recognize that it's all happening as thoughts. It all begins with thoughts, and these thoughts lead to actions. And like it's very simple, but it seems like a lot of it seems like what's required to get to that place of mental sovereignty is to actually face all of our shadows and to face all of our demons and our pain and to look at them head on. And that seems to be a consistent thing that I've seen in people who speak about their experiences with Iboga, is that it puts them face to face with their deepest pains and with these elements of their psyche that they've perhaps been neglecting or something. But yeah, it seems like that type of deep inner work is required to some degree to be able to fully reclaim one's sovereignty and one's power. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, that's why people leave Iboga, you know, more empowered than before, perhaps, even if it's just a little bit. But what do you think of that?
Yeah, no doubt. Like, you know, things are going to happen in life, and the thing in the West, which, you know, probably nobody could agree on it, but we're not really taught how to think from a young age. You know, we're just, you know, maybe right. We have some examples with friends or our parents or whoever, but we're, you know, there's no, most of us just aren't taught how to think. And so these things happen. And if we can't manage them properly at the time, then they go inside and we carry them around from there. And usually that involves like not looking at it, like you're saying, and just kind of shoving it down, trying to forget about it and just move forward in life. But eventually it accumulates too much where, you know, then it starts affecting, like you said, like our present decisions that we make. And so, yeah, that stuff has to be, yeah, in order to get to a good place, like I said, that stuff has to be dealt with. And, you know, through Iboga, it can happen through actually showing you this thing that's getting in the way of you living a good life. And it can really explain it to you and go into detail and make it logical. But also it happens where people may realize, you know, they need to overcome this thing. There may not necessarily be a lesson there for them, but they can move past it energetically, where they look back at that thing and it just doesn't affect them the same way anymore. And so it can kind of happen both ways with Iboga, but it, you know, in the end, like you said, that's something that does need to happen for people. They need to let some things go and move past them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pretty sobering thought to recognize at some point in your life that the only thing that has ever been holding you back is just yourself. Yeah. To some degree. It's usually greatly unconscious, it seems, in most people. That's a sobering thought to sit with. Do yeah. you guys at the Iboga Wellness Center, at the Iboga Wellness Center, do you guys also work with 5-MeO?
We don't. A lot of the Ibogaine clinics I've seen, a lot of them do work with it. You know, typically say in the Ibogaine clinic, you know, mostly they deal with detox work, some psychospiritual, but you kind of get one dose based on your body weight, and then they may give you like an additional smaller dose. And then I've been seeing they've been doing 5-MeO. And I'm sure that's powerful for people. But yeah, just kind of how we were trained and the setup and how to go about things, like it's kind of Iboga only on our end, but no doubt right. that can be a powerful thing for people as well.
Have you ever sat with 5-MeO DMT, Levi?
I have one time. Yep. And it was really, really beautiful. It was probably 4 years ago now, and a friend was a 5-MeO provider, and he gave it to me. And yeah, it was really like, I just remember like a lot of love and kind of seeing or sensing like the core energy of just life and you know, the universe and whatever was happening, and being able to like feel that and just like how perfect that was. I remember mine lasted quite a while. It lasted like an hour or so.
Wow.
And yeah, but it was really, really powerful. What about yourself? I'm sure you have, huh?
Just once as well. Yeah. Only one time in 2021. And yeah, I could not have possibly expected or planned or like had a preconceived notion or have someone explain to me what this is going to be like. It was by far the most powerful experience I'd ever had in my life. I actually once heard, 5-MeO described as going from zero to infinity in one breath.
Yeah.
That kind of sums it up. So it might be a silly question, but like, because my experience with 5-MeO is like, it's a vibrational medicine, meaning it's not like typical DMT where a lot of people will see like visions and sacred geometry and all these types of, it's a very visual experience. Whereas 5-MeO to me, it was like extremely, it's so hard to describe because it's something I felt from the inside and it rolls throughout my body. And it's like, it's a vibrational medicine. That's the best way I could like describe it. How would you describe Ibogaine in a similar context? Like, do people see, like actually see vision type experiences, or you know what I'm saying? Like if 5-MeO is zero to infinity in one breath, how would you describe Ibogaine?
So just, you know, I've never actually had like pure Ibogaine, but Iboga.
Iboga.
I agree. No, I agree with you. And a friend of mine was talking about this recently, but it does come from like a resonance as well. And with Iboga, you can, as the medicine's coming on, like you can feel this resonance, this vibration come into your body. And eventually, if it's coming on strong, you'll actually like hear it. You'll hear like this buzzing sound that happens in your ear. And so, yeah, that vibration in the body, like, it's essentially a cleansing vibration that happens. And the way I would look at it, like in the end, that vibration happening, what I see happening in the end, and you know, probably all the listeners aren't, say, spiritual people, not all of them anyways, but right. What happens is Iboga brings the soul like fully back inside and brings the body, the mind, and the soul back in the unison. But that soul has to get in place first. And why wouldn't our soul be right there the whole time? Well, it's the experiences that we talk about, like especially if we hurt ourselves, at least as we view it in the Bwiti, the soul kind of protects itself off to the side and doesn't want to get hurt anymore. And so it, rather than just staying right there and taking it, it kind of moves to the side. And we talk about it in the Bwiti being like a not necessarily a child, but pure like a child, like a 5 or 6 year old, you know, that's just coming into the world and starting to understand things. And they don't understand, it doesn't understand like self-abuse. And so it brings it back in, but that happens like through a resonance, like you're saying, like it changes the vibration in the body. And that vibration also cleans the mind. It also gets the energy of any traumas or whatever experiences that have happened that we don't need anymore. And so, yeah, that's interesting that you would say that.
Yeah. It's interesting. I when I heard it described, 5-MeO described as that way, I was like, wow, yeah, that's a really accurate description of it.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how, because that experience was so powerful, like it basically showed my body, like it gave access to my awareness and my body, like a certain frequency, I guess you could say. So to give you context, is like every single time I've done any form of psychedelics after that 5-MeO ceremony, psychedelics to me have never been the same, because it almost seems like my consciousness was exposed to this space, if you will, this other space. And that space is so relevant when I go into medicine journeys these days. And yeah, it's an interesting observation, but I feel like I haven't, you know, speaking of how moderate psychedelics really are, I haven't felt called to use 5-MeO ever since. And looking back, it's like arguably nothing has ever been the same for me ever since that day. Like I can look back and then look at that period of my life up until where I am now. And I can just see growth that's taken place in a slow way, but also in something of an ineffable nature, but something fundamentally changed after that ceremony.
Yeah, beautiful, man. Beautiful. Yeah, that's what you want. You know, you had a good one and you're not looking for it again for a while.
No, not at all. No. It was a jarring experience, to be honest with you. Like it was crazy. And I was with my wife when she did it. And like when I had the full release, the full embrace dose, like I was just like rolling around and I had like, it was just, you know, this is something about psychedelics is like it almost exposes the individual to something that's like realer than reality. It's like, it's what do you do with that information when you're confronted with something that's like, it looks realer than real reality itself. And then surreal at the exact same time. It's just like, this is why I just hold these medicines in such reverence because it can have seriously profound effects. Also, acknowledging it's not for everybody. And, you know, taking a boga is not exactly like taking a Advil or a Tylenol or something like that. You know, not everyone's ready to face these deep caverns of their own psyche. Mm-hmm. But powerful stuff.
Yeah. I think it's shifting, you know, now like people that would never consider psychedelics, mm-hmm. like some of them are coming in now and that's usually a family or a partner or somebody that they see a change in. And so it's interesting, like we get a good portion of people that come in and Iboga is their first plant medicine or big psychedelic experience. And so it's interesting, get a lot of people, you know, coming in their 60s and it's their first, journey of this sort. And so more and more people are coming around, but yeah, it's not for everybody, you know, especially if they're older, they've heard all their life about how bad, you know, psychedelics are and, you know, frying the egg on the pan and that whole thing. And but it's definitely changing and I'm glad it is because it can help a lot of people. You know, there's nothing that even comes close for, you know, turning somebody else's life around. And for some people, like that takes time too. So if anybody's out there is working with medicine, they're not there yet. Like it's not always just this, you know, quick turnaround and life's perfect. What you should look for the teachings that you get from that and then, you know, practice them and make them a part of you and, you know, go from there. And, you know, really, even with Iboga, it took me a good 5-6 years or so to kind of get into a spot where I was like, okay, I feel like I'm doing, you know, things right, you know, not hurting myself anymore. And so it's definitely a path. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's a path. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. It's a nice humble way to put it. It does put you on a path. What is it that compels you to be doing this type of work, Levi? Like, what is it that compels you to, I mean, the medicine obviously had a profound effect on you and then you got initiated by Bwiti tribe. You know, you've had a very sacred process and initiation into this. What is it that compels you these days into facilitating and holding space for people going through their own process and possibly invoking themselves onto their own path?
Yeah, cool question. You know, mine always gets back to the love for Iboga itself and just for everything that it's given me. And yeah, just wanting to share that with people. I know, you know, to do this work, you have to care about people, you know, and want to see people improve. And, you know, I definitely have that. But yeah, my love for Iboga, just wanting to continue and follow it, you know, because it keeps going deeper. Like it's amazing how many levels I've gone into Iboga and just learned more and more, you know, about myself and just about being here in this world. And, you know, and it gets down to like, you know, we're here, you know, I'm an Iboga provider or you're a podcast host. Like those things are cool and the things we spend our time on, but we're here, you know, in the end to enjoy life and be here. And, you know, we've been given this gift to live. And, you know, like I said, it's the biggest thing that can ever happen to us. Like nothing is bigger than life itself. And so, yeah, just you know, Iboga constantly reminds me of that, like our life is here to be enjoyed. Does that mean every moment's going to be enjoyed? Definitely not. But, you know, overall, it should be, you know, going in that direction. And so, and Iboga is just very consistent, like, you know, here, definitely here to guide people through it, but just setting the proper space, giving them the right information, you know, guiding them when they do need, like Iboga is the one that, that does the work. And so, yeah, just having a whole lot of confidence in Iboga that in the end, people are going to get what they need. But yeah, just really, really loving this medicine, you know, and, you know, even looking back when I was young, you know, I had my first acid, I think when I was 12 or 11 or something like that. And, you know, started doing that and mushrooms through high school. And I was kind of like the guy that kind of always organized things and like, you know, set the space and stuff and not, you know, knowing anything about like shamanism or anything like that, but just, you know, wanting to do it right. So we went in deep and so I feel like I really found my spot, you know, down the road of like, being able to work with Iboga and see people better themselves.
It was destiny from a young age.
Yeah, kind of feel that way. Yeah. No, it just continues to like never cease to amaze. Like we'll have people come in just really rough. Like we don't have suicidal people come, you know, obviously we wanted to get them in a more, you know, safer state before that. But a lot of people come just really kind of like, this is it for me. And just having the confidence of knowing that like this medicine, if we do it right, give them the right amount, like this is going to get them to where they need to be so they can start again. And so that's really exciting.
Mm. Yeah. Truly, truly exciting. Wow. Well, Levi, this has been really nice and really informative and so cool to gain a deeper insight into the nature of Iboga medicine and the origins of it as well. And your medicine and your essence as a human being, it's so valued. And I really appreciate your time and, you know, taking the time to come on here and share with the world about what it is that you're offering and at the Iboga Wellness Center and just your journey. I really appreciate this conversation and getting to know you a little bit more.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, thanks so much, man. I definitely appreciate being able to spread the word of Iboga to your audience. And I imagine it's gonna help somebody someday. Or at least one of them will come through, and whether they come to Iboga here or wherever. That you're gonna change somebody's life through this thing. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that was the philosophy of this podcast when Brian started this years ago, was that the Elysium Project is based on the philosophy that a conversation can change the world or change someone's life. And even if this conversation positively affects only one person, then, you know, we've done our job for the day. So I really appreciate this.
Man. Yeah, good job. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Where can people find you if they would like to connect with you further and get to know you more and what you're offering? Where can people get in touch?
So our website is Iboga Wellness. And for any of it, it's kind of a weird sounding word. It's Iboga, ibogawellness.com. And yeah, we have quite a bit of information on Iboga and the experience here. Some of the differences like between say Iboga and ayahuasca and a bunch of videos and stuff. So yeah, get on there and you can definitely contact us from there. And, we're here in Costa Rica. I don't know if we mentioned that, but we're here in the southwest of Costa Rica on a mountaintop in a really beautiful area. And we have, small groups come through. So we have 7 people max per retreat, usually 3 to 5 staff. And, so if that eventually calls anybody, please do get in touch.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Levi. Really appreciate your time. And
I appreciate it too. Good job. Thank you.
Such a pleasure. Okay.
Okay. Take care.
See everybody. There we have it, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of the Elysium Project podcast. If you'd like to support our show, please consider going to patreon.com/Elysium Project. and become a patron. Every dollar you invest into us goes straight back into the project, allowing us to create the highest quality content and to continue bringing on the most innovative, interesting, and dopest guests ever. Thank you so much for your support, and we'll see you next week.